Run it up. It's Friday, the day before Halloween. Spoopy season. Peyton Gallagher here. Not in costume. Wearing a denim shirt and a sweater. And a catfish hat. Stream can see that. The radio can't. There's Will, also not in costume. He's running the Periscope. Justin Scarlett's pushing buttons, also not in costume. We all hate Halloween, apparently.
It's not even Halloween yet. Quite.
I mean, it's tomorrow.
I don't mix work and pleasure.
Oh, okay. Noted. So, we'll start today's show where we kind of left off yesterday, and that's the news around Trevor Lawrence. We've had a day to let it sit, and fact of the matter is that Trevor Lawrence has a coronavirus, and we thought we might be experiencing this for the first time a couple of weeks ago with Nick Saban, and it turned out it was a false positive. Now we're experiencing it. This is the first moment where a player being impacted by coronavirus has really had genuine, serious impact on who may or may not win the national title. And we'll see what happens. Because this was always going to happen, and that was going to be the grand experiment, and I don't want to be cold about it, because somebody has a virus that could potentially be threatening to their long-term health, and that's never something to take lightly. But the fact is that we're going to find out what happens when coronavirus impacts the national picture. What is the college football playoff going to do with this if Clemson loses one of their next two games against Notre Dame and Boston College? Two very losable contests. Do they get in over a team like BYU or Cincinnati that runs the table? And Clemson has two losses potentially, but both came without Trevor Lawrence. What do you do with that? We're going to find out. Does Clemson with two losses get in over Georgia with two losses to Alabama? Well, we're going to find out. We were always going to find out. This was going to happen to one of the major contenders. And now it has. I've said it time and time again. Probably pretty annoying at this point. But by choosing to play the sport of football, which I was lukewarm on whenever the choice was made, if not against, I warmed up to it, I saw more perspectives, and now I am for. It was the right choice. These guys were going to get COVID one way or another. People were going to get COVID one way or another. By simply attending college, you put yourself at risk. Might as well do what you came to school for and go play football. The players wanted it. The fans wanted it. The schools wanted it, and it happened, and I don't begrudge that in any way, shape, or form, but it was also the reality at that point that guys were going to get COVID because you weren't playing in a bubble. You couldn't control the variables. And at some point, it was going to impact things on a historic scale in the sense of this could be the reason why we look at 2020 on Football Reference or whatever the equivalent is in 30 years, and it has an asterisk next to it, where we haven't necessarily seen something like that since World War II. But this was always going to happen, and make no bones about it. I hope Trevor Lawrence is okay. I've been informed by sources that he is exhibiting mild symptoms, so that is at least promising. That's what the top end of the show is going to be today. I caught up with Sports Illustrated lead college football writer Ross Dellinger, talked to him today. There was some spotty audio quality. The phone call kept dropping in and out, and I apologize to you for that. A little bit out of my control, but I felt like the information I gained was valuable enough to where it was worthwhile putting out there, so I apologize again for the audio quality. We're going to touch on that when we come back from a break. This is Run It Up, WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. It is a vibe session. Run It Up on a Friday night. Justin playing bangers exclusively. I'm just going to let it ride for a second. Okay, there you go. Slow fade. All right, so I am not the authority on issues regarding what's going on inside programs with COVID, inside conferences. I'm not connected like that. I'm only 21. I don't know how I would have established those connections at this point. That'd be pretty impressive.
What's 9 plus 10?
21.
Okay,
so I talked to Ross Dellinger, who's far more in the know than I am, published a pretty big article this past week talking about Wisconsin and the protocols that the Big Ten has in place and why they are that way. Also talked a little bit about Trevor Lawrence and gained some insight there. Again, apologies on the quality of the audio. It was not fantastic. I tried my best, but phone service, gonna phone service, and sometimes things don't work out the best. That said, still felt it valuable to get this information out there. So without further ado, here's Ross Dellinger. Now joined by Ross Dellinger. He writes about college football at Sports Illustrated. And Ross, let's start with Trevor Lawrence. The news broke last night that he had tested positive for COVID-19. You have an article up now on Sports Illustrated explaining all of this. But just for the sake of the listener, would you take a moment and outline some of the steps in front of Lawrence so that he can get back onto the field?
Yeah, everybody wants to know if he'll play the game against Notre Dame, which is next weekend, and it's a complex issue. Trevor has symptoms, although they're mild symptoms. He does have symptoms, and so if that's the case. Then his 10-day clock, which all COVID positives have to go 10 days in isolation, basically. Mm-hmm. If you're symptomatic, your 10-day clock starts when your symptoms started. So Clemson has to identify when exactly his symptoms began, and that's when the 10-day clock starts. And so that's probably, from everything I've gathered, Wednesday, maybe even Tuesday, that his symptoms began. So do the math. That gets him to return right in time for the Notre Dame game, Friday or maybe even Saturday morning. So first of all, have his symptoms stop, because he can't come out of isolation unless his symptoms have completely diminished. So that has to happen, one. And two, do you want to start a quarterback in a big game, even when experienced as Trevor Lawrence without any practice that week? And that's kind of the issue. He's going to have to kind of what they call acclimatization, where you because when you're in isolation, you're not supposed to do any physical activity. So he's back, and some conferences have an actual time to reacclimate, 2 or 3 days. The SEC has like a 3-day reacclimatization,
right?
Kind of have that. So it's at the discretion of the school. So it's a complicated issue, and it's definitely possible for the game. However, it's just, I don't know if it's probable, but it's certainly possible.
Say Trevor misses both Boston College and Notre Dame, and Clemson loses both. And this is kind of a twisted hypothetical that I don't know if you can even anticipate, but how do you think the playoff committee might look at that? And would Clemson be granted an amnesty of sorts for these Lawrence-less results, in your estimation?
Well, that's a great question. I think that two losses is a big difference from one loss without Trevor is one thing. Losing more than one game, even without Trevor, I think it's a little more consequential. So I do think that they, with a loss, especially if it were against a really high caliber team, Notre Dame. So if they were to beat Boston College with a backup and then play Notre Dame with a backup and lose, I could see the committee looking at that differently and almost in a way giving them a pass. I cannot see them giving them a pass for two losses. even if they're both without Lawrence, that would be hard for me to see happening.
Interesting. So switching gears here, Ross, earlier in the week you wrote a story, and we've already seen the Big Ten, and the story's about the Big Ten and its procedure regarding cardiac screening and why it takes 21 days for players to be cleared again. We've seen the Big Ten change directions already once in relation to COVID by deciding to play a season at all when presented with new data. There is a JAMA report out there now saying that the cardiac process may be unnecessary. We're only seeing about 1% of college athletes being afflicted with cardiac symptoms. You quoted a couple of conference decision makers in that piece that insinuated that, hey, we might need to reevaluate this. Do you think there's a chance the Big Ten changes course on this and kind of lightens their provisions to something like we've seen in the ACC and the SEC, where it's about 10 to 14 days?
Well, I think we all have to remember, we still don't on this virus and how it affects athletes and how it affects athletes' hearts. But the data we have over the last couple of months since the postponement and return, we do have more data since that time. And that data is coming out, as you mentioned, at JAMA. It's the impacts on the heart are very important for those athletes who tested positive for COVID and are asymptomatic. They're seeing so few that some of the leading sports cardiologists in the nation recommending no heart cardiac screenings for those who are asymptomatic and probably symptomatic. And it's not just the Big Ten that is obviously doing a lot of the heart cardiac, pretty much every conference is doing it, but the difference of the Big Ten, because they're doing more of it, they have that more time and it takes, as you mentioned, 21 days. So I think eventually we're going to see conferences to adjust. There's going to be more data coming out over the next month or two. We're going to see more of an adjustment. You don't have as much data. And I think the Big Ten's original decision to postpone was overly cautious. Probably think the 21-day thing was overly cautious. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a lot of data. Now we have more. And so I think
I apologize again. So can you explain to me the league's decision then to not allow Nebraska to play Chattanooga this week? The two teams communicated. They kind of set up this preliminary matchup with both teams not playing anybody this week. And then the league said no. And that's coming in lieu of the cancellation of Nebraska's game with Wisconsin, because Wisconsin had players and personnel come down with COVID. Nebraska, for all we know, is presumably clean with no positive cases. Why did the league decide to block that?
Well, I think I think the big thing is, the Big Ten made their decision to go conference only. That was that. You know, they didn't want to, if they allowed Nebraska to schedule, and they would have to allow every other team to schedule a non-conference game if their games were postponed or canceled. So I think they didn't want to open the proverbial can of worms. Mm. Is really what it comes down to. They wanted to probably keep uniformity on that, and I understand it. But you have to go back to the original decision, and I know they took backlash on that decision. But the SEC did conference only as well, and Pac-12 is doing conference only. I think we've seen that conference only does help you mitigate some of the risk, just because you have conference protocols, you have a little shorter travel time, a little more conference a lot of times. The thing that Big Ten didn't make any sense, really, and I understand a lot of their decisions up to this point, except for this one, is they allowed no flexibility in their schedule. Mm-hmm. Playing 9 games in 9 weeks is almost impossible. We've seen 50. than 15% of games that have been scheduled so far postponed. And so you knew they were not going to play nine games, and everybody was not going to play nine games in 9 weeks. You need some kind of flexibility, and that's where they really probably did not make a very smart decision there.
So I think you said a lot of very valuable and enlightening points there. And it's interesting because the outside looking in, Nebraska has kind of had this tenuous relationship with the Big Ten ever since COVID became a significant issue in this country and started to threaten some of these conferences. They said that they were going to go play somewhere else. That did not engender much goodwill in the league. So right now, what is the relationship between those two parties, Nebraska and the Big Ten?
Understand signed up for a long-term deal with the Big Ten. So I don't think there certainly is some animosity. There's certainly some ticked off people both in Big Ten headquarters at Nebraska and in Lincoln about Big Ten headquarters. So there clearly is some frustration there. But, I don't know that anything can happen. I mean, when you sign the binding contract, it's a deal. But they get a cut of Big Ten revenue, which is a lot of money. And there certainly is a lot of animosity.
All right, that was Jordan Dellinger.
Ross Dellinger, which that's apparently still playing in the background.
Now it's done.
There we are. A whole calamity. Kind of like the audio quality of the interview itself. I won't call more attention to it, but I hope it was valuable. Ross brought up a bunch of interesting points there, I thought, throughout. You know, you come down hard on the conference when you think about Nebraska presenting what seemed to be a common sense solution to the fact that they were unable to play because their opponent had COVID and they did not. And then he makes a good point, which is if Nebraska gets to do that, everybody else in the league should get to do that. And by the way, the SEC is playing an all-conference schedule, and nobody seems to be mad at the league whenever Florida won't be able to play all their games, because I guarantee you they won't, because they got COVID, and at some point, one of their opponents probably will have COVID, and they won't be able to finish their schedule. This is something we're going to see around the league. Teams aren't going to be able to complete all their games. And again, it's just going to be this very fascinating referendum on how the committee, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, sees these different conferences. The sample size is homogenous. We don't really know a ton about these teams, and now we've got inconsistent data sets in terms of how many games teams have played and who they actually ended up getting to play and when they played them and when they had COVID and players weren't available. It's all going to be very difficult to parse apart, and this decision just becomes more complicated with each one of these. How do you pick four teams out of this haystack? I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Not a clue.
So, with that said, there's no point in trying to answer a question that we cannot answer. So instead, we'll take a look ahead to the week in store in the SEC and in the nation in college football when we return. This is Run It Up, WKGM, Fox Sports, Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.
To just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter.
Life is good. You know what I mean? Like, 100,000 for the cheapest
ring on the finger look. And that beautiful bit of transitioning reminds you that that quote from Herm Edwards is 18 years old today. Happy birthday. Gabe Schwartz is on the phone line with us. He's going to stick with us for the rest of the program as we roll through a comprehensive preview of the weekend in college football.
Tennessee's not playing, so not that sad for Vols fans here in the Valley. They can focus on other things, and that's our job to fill you in. Gabe, my friend, you were out there on the links hitting golf balls today, so you're pretty happy, I know that, but I gotta ask, you doing okay?
Yes, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. Excited for this weekend. We're going to start in the SEC and finish out the first hour there. We'll pick it back up, hour number two, talk a little bit about the Big 12 race. Ohio State, Penn State, which has lost a little bit of its shine after Michael Penix scored that touchdown, or maybe didn't. And Indiana beat them. We might even talk about Rutgers in Indiana, because that's somehow a good football game. Welcome to 2020. We will, though, start in the Southeastern Conference, the place where it just means more. Georgia at Kentucky. Gabe, I know you look at the betting slant. Have you put any thought into this game at all, or are you just saying Georgia's covering that 17-point line or whatever it is?
Well, it opened at minus 14, and I really liked that for Georgia. I still think 17. This feels like an SEC East game that Georgia just, from the start, they dominate. And if you get your hopes up as a Kentucky fan, which I know most people in the Knoxville area are the exact opposite of that, you'd be talking yourself into a fool's errand in that sense. So I do think that this is one where Georgia, off of a bye, after getting blanked in the second half by Alabama, they are going to come back with a vengeance and win this one convincingly, is my guess. I think that I've been on the record as saying Stetson Bennett is good against everybody and more than okay against everybody that's not Alabama, Ohio State, or Clemson, and I think that that will be the case all year long. And this is just another example of that.
Yeah, Kirby Smart has yet to lose consecutive SEC games after that first year in 2016. He did it twice that year. Since then, Georgia's just been rolling. They went to the national championship the next year, and then so on and so forth from there. Some numbers about Stetson Bennett that are fascinating to me. Shout out to SEC StatCat and that fantastic website for enabling me to find these numbers. So Stetson Bennett is 29 of 55 this year on attempts traveling over 10 yards in the air with 5 touchdowns. Here's where it gets crazy. He's doing so on an average depth of target of 20.2 yards. So pretty much the guy is slinging it. That's what that translates to. On passes traveling fewer than 10 yards, the average depth of target, that's where the guy catching the ball catches the ball, it's 2.92 yards. That translates to this. It's check down or touchdown for Stetson Bennett, and I don't see why he wouldn't be able to do that against Georgia, or rather against Kentucky and the secondary that's been up and down throughout the year. You said you think Stetson Bennett's the guy. Do you think the way they play offense around him is good enough for Georgia to contend for broader things down the line, like a national title?
I think they're certainly in the race for the fourth spot in the playoffs still. And, I mean, I didn't feel like they really got, like, outclassed in the Alabama game. I mean, things fell apart.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. If just talking about this weekend in particular, Kentucky averages 60 yards per game more rushing than they do passing, and rush defense is Georgia's best part of their defense. I mean, they're a pretty good defense, pretty great defense anyways, but their rush defense is allowing only 65 yards a game.
Yeah, it's historic.
Kentucky is averaging 185 yards rushing per game.
Yeah.
So I don't anticipate Kentucky's passing attack to just suddenly leapfrog into the upper echelon of the SEC, and I don't think that they're going to be able to run the ball successfully. So I think that this is a game where Kentucky struggles to get – I think it's more likely that they score 0 points than it is that they score 20.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
That is a bold claim. That's a hold-me-back-level claim. We'll get to that later in the show, but that would be worthy of it. It is important to note that Joey Gatewood will start this game for Kentucky. It will be his first start at the college level. After being a highly touted prospect and committing to Auburn a couple years ago, he transferred, got the same waiver treatment that Cade Mays got. He will play in this game after Terry Wilson was unable to spark up this passing attack. That will be big. Another important note here, Kentucky is yet to win a football game this year in which they have not forced four turnovers.
Tough team to make your first start against as a quarterback.
Yeah, not great.
Bad draw.
The best defense in the country. Justin, do you support what Gabe just said? Do you think that it's more likely that Georgia allows no points than they allow more than 20?
I mean, I'd like to see this team with Gatewood at the helm before I can really make a definitive claim on that, but I think that that's entirely fair. I mean, this is a Kentucky offense that isn't all that good. We saw that whenever they beat Tennessee, even. They scored 17 points on defense, basically.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly like they're a superpower offense. This is still probably the best defense in the country. So, yes, I think that's an entirely plausible happening.
Okay, fair enough. We'll move on. Justin, I know you're fired up about this, so I'm going to let you go first, sir. Arkansas at A&M. Arkansas should be 3-1. They're 2-2. Sam Pittman.
Talk about him. I mean, I saw something earlier in the week. SEC Network's kind of mid-season awards, if you could call it that.
Yeah.
Biggest surprise, stuff like that. And one of the pundits had Sam Pittman as their coach of the year so far.
Which he should be.
And I think that's entirely fair. I mean, he's doubled their wins, SEC wins, over the past 2 years this year, with two already. They had one over the past 2 years.
And it should be three. They should have beaten Auburn. They got jobbed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. This is a program that has been dwelling in the basement of the SEC ever since Petrino left, pretty much. I mean, they were okay under Bielema. Had like an 8-4 year, a couple 8-4 years.
Yeah.
Alex Collins ran the ball all over the place, but still, nothing special. I don't know, man. I just love Sam Pittman. He's just a guy. He's like typical football coach, right? He's been doing it for a long time. He's never got a shot at a head gig until now. And I thought this would be a pretty tough job for him. But, I mean, it looks like if anybody can turn it around at this point, he's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he said on Scott Van Pelt's SportsCenter that this was going to be his last job. He doesn't want to coach anywhere else. And you love to hear something like that. A guy who grew up not too far from Fayetteville, a guy that seems very committed to this process. When you hire the defensive line, offensive line guys, you either get Ed Orgeron or you get what San Francisco had a couple years ago when they hired a defensive line coach.
Tom Sula.
And Jim Tom Sula might as well have been a hot dog vendor in the concourse coaching the football team. It either works or it doesn't. It looks like Arkansas has found something. Gabe, what have your initial impressions been of this Arkansas football team?
From a gambling perspective, the man is a saint. I mean, he's 4-0. So I completely agree with Justin's take. He would also be on the field, he would be my SEC coach of the year at the midway point, but certainly in the gambling perspective, he is as well. So I will just say this. I just took a look at the ESPN football power index. They have Arkansas at 22.6% for matchup predictor.
Yeah.
That just absurd in my mind. I think that this is a game that is going to come down to the final possession.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, I am historically an anti-Kellen Mond guy and am usually a little higher on Felipe Franks, especially from what I've seen of him at Arkansas in comparison to what he was at Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But we will talk about it later because I have Arkansas as one of my picks for this week on the pick six. But they're just getting way too many points, and I think that this is a game that comes down to the wire.
Well, let me support that opinion of yours, sir. So, although Arkansas has not beaten Texas A&M since the Aggies joined the league back in 2012, which that's obscene, I can't imagine there are many streaks like that in division in the entirety of conference. I don't think that there's a team that just hasn't beaten one of the other teams in the league other than this one that's in that side of the division. At least it's not coming to my head if there is one. That being said, despite the fact that over the last 2 years, Arkansas has been in this 20-game SEC losing streak, The Razorbacks have played A&M within a score each of the last 2 years, and that's with Chad Morris coaching them. So one would think that with Sam Pittman, the game would be close, if not maybe even in Arkansas's favor. Currently, Gabe, Vegas does not have Arkansas within a score of A&M on the odds, correct?
No, it's a 14-point spread, and I gave you the line at 12, and I still like it at 14. It's even better.
We'll get to it for sure later on in the program. I don't want you to spoil everything, but I do have a couple of quick facts about this matchup that make it a little bit intriguing in terms of the one-on-one, the X's and the O's, the Jimmys and the Joes. So it's important to note that Arkansas is very good at keeping things in front of them. Opponents have averaged only 5.6 yards per passing attempt. That's extraordinarily low. Compare that to the fact that Mont has averaged 7.6 yards in the same statistic per pass attempt. Something's got to give there. But it also kind of plays into Mond's favor and what A&M does. Mond is 64 of 82 for 630 yards and 6 touchdowns this year on passes that travel fewer than 10 yards in the air. Over half of the receiving yards for this Texas A&M team have come after the catch this year. They've gotten 514 yards of yak. That is pretty good. That tells you that it's a lot of screen game. It's a lot of shorter game to Weidermeyer, Lane, Anaya Smith, and some of the playmakers in this offense. So it's really going to be on Arkansas to come up and tackle, make plays in the open field, and make sure that when they get into the red zone, they don't give up touchdowns.
Are they going to play this game at Jerry World?
They are not. It was initially intended to be played there, but obviously because of circumstances, the game was moved to Kyle Field, which is a distinct home advantage because apparently Texas A&M doesn't care. And they're just going to fill their stadium. You thought it was pretty much full for Florida. They're letting in a lot more people. Apparently the upper deck is full tonight for Midnight Yell.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Yeah. So Arkansas will pretty much play a road game here when they weren't supposed to, which is funny. We're going to move on now. Missouri is at Florida. Gabe, do you think that the Tigers and Eli Drinkwitz have any chance of beating this Gators team after coming off these consecutive bye weeks?
I think it'll be close because the COVID stuff is very odd. And they just, not practicing is super tough in terms of being ready for a real college football game. It's that simple to me. So I think it will be close. I mean, I'm a pretty big believer in Missouri's new quarterback. How do you say the name? Bazelak?
Yes, Bazelak.
Yes. I think he's pretty good, and he'll be able to keep it close. And we also just don't know. We still don't know because colleges aren't going to release it, who has COVID on Florida and how that impacts things.
Well, we know it was as many as 14 players this week, and we don't necessarily know how deep it got the week prior. We know that Dan Mullen has had it in the past couple of weeks. There is really, aside from Houston and Baylor, not really any program that I know of that's been hit as hard as Florida has been this past week. And it is going to be very fascinating to see at this high level how a team can bounce back, especially in midseason. Missouri has not lost a football game since Connor Bazelak became the starting quarterback. I don't know. It just seems like this one might be a little bit closer than you thought it would be. Justin, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to depend really on who has COVID for Florida, who's missed this game. I mean, if you're going to tell me that a Kyle Pitts or a Kyle Trask is going to miss this game, that changes a lot more than if the second string backup left guard misses.
Yeah.
You know? So that's really what it boils down to me, because I don't think a fully healthy Florida team, I mean, that's a team that should hang 50 on this Missouri team easily and would win by 2 or 3 touchdowns, in my opinion. But you don't know that.
Missouri's been weird all year, man. They've played every different kind of game. They had the shootout where they won whatever it was, 45-42 against LSU. They had last week where they went like 20-10 against Kentucky. They looked strong against Alabama. I mean, they played Alabama as closely as anybody has all year. The final score of that game, 38-19. Missouri's a weird team. And as we look through these things, you know, you look at Arkansas coming into the year and you think Georgia getting played tightly by them is a really bad indictment on Georgia. And then you find out Arkansas might be okay. It might be the same situation with Missouri where, you know, there just isn't enough information with everything that's happened so far, and really the only glaring loss is them getting beat the way they did by Tennessee. And that's what spurred Connor Bazelak becoming their guy. So I'm interested to see what they do outside of the state of Missouri. They played their last couple games at home. They've won said games. Let's see if they can't get their first road win in this one. I still don't think I'm going to pick it. I still think I'm going to go with Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney and how lethal this offense has been. But if one of those primary guys for Florida is not able to play this game or has been significantly negatively impacted by COVID, Missouri could pull this off, and that's not crazy. Florida's a better team, but it's possible. Last game in the league this week, Ole Miss at Vanderbilt. Yay!
Real barn burner.
Free JRP. That's all I'll say. Lane Kiffin tweeted a photo of John Reese Plumlee in his office. JRP had stolen all of Kiffin's championship rings, was wearing them. It was incredible. Free my mans. I know Matt Corral's been good, but can we entertain this?
I mean, I'll entertain it. Pitch me.
Corral has not been that good the last couple of games, and Ole Miss has lost said games. He threw four picks, three of which to a walk-on against Arkansas, in which the team got blown out. Tore up Alabama, tore up Kentucky, sure. Was decent against Auburn, but I just think John Reese Plumlee offers a different dimension to this offense and should be playing more. I think it should be going about 50-50.
I mean, it really just comes down to how Kiffin wants to run his offense, right? I mean, if you want to throw the ball over the yard, you're going to have to play Corral just because I don't think JRP gives you that dimension to your offense. But if you want to come out here and run veers, read options, all this other fun stuff that Kiffin likes to kind of put in as wrinkles and make that a larger part of your offense, then I don't see any reason why you wouldn't play John Reese Plumlee, just because he is by far the superior overall athlete to Corral. He just doesn't have the arm that Corral has.
He reminds me a lot of Lamar Jackson. I've said it before, I'll say it again. He is that dynamic a runner when he's got the ball in his hands. And even if you're going to use him how they did against Florida in that first game, as a guy who just comes in and takes some motions and draws the defense in, you hand it to him a couple times, just stop trying to throw in the ball. I don't understand that. Why you got him out here running post routes? He's a quarterback. But you throw him a screen or two. Let him get out in the open field. I think he could be a valuable part of this offense. I must also add in the tweet, Lane Kiffin said, our offensive coordinator should be playing this guy more, in the tweet. So that's just fantastic. Gabe, you know how I feel about JRP. Is it clouding my judgment?
Yeah, you're by far, like, aside from maybe his parents and his girlfriend, you're like his biggest fan. So
yeah.
Peyton's getting invited to the Reese Plumlee family dinner.
His dad liked a tweet of mine once, so that was cool. Shout out to Mr. Reese Plumlee.
Yeah, it clouds your judgment a little bit. I don't think that the difference is truly that. I completely agree with Justin. I think it's just a matter of what style they want to play. And what Kiffin's telling you is, you know what I really liked was week one against Florida when they played JRP as like a semi-wide receiver or running back. Just do that. Let him be like running back Denard Robinson. And instead of forcing him down our throats as like this weird read option quarterback, and it's just, not a thing that is going to work. It's if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks in college football, and you need to just pick one. And Kiffin's telling you what he wants to play like, not necessarily now, but in terms of the future, he wants a guy who's a significantly better version of Matt Corral instead of a significantly better version of JRP.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to play JRP as your full-time quarterback, you basically got to do with him what Mississippi State did a few years ago with Fitzgerald. I mean, that's what your offense has got to look at. That's the type of player you're dealing with.
Yeah, I'd say so. I just think he's too dynamic to keep him bridled on the sideline, not doing anything. Just get him in the game. You're running quarterback power stuff for Matt Corral. Why not let JRP be the one who does that? I guess it telegraphs it. That's what you're doing a little bit. But, you know, John Reese Plumlee can also throw the ball. Let's not pretend like he's just a terrible quarterback. I don't know. Just a thought. Does Vanderbilt have any chance in this game coming off back-to-back bye weeks, one of which was COVID-induced, one of which was scheduled?
No.
I would concur with Gabe. No. I mean, you were talking yesterday about how Derek Mason might be the most likely coach in the SEC to get fired. I don't think this helps his case, Andy. I think Lane gets the boys back on track this week.
You know,
and if there's...
Go ahead.
If there's anybody who's incentivized to run up a score, it's Lane Kiffin when he's 1-3. And, I mean, we talked earlier this week, Peyton, about how perfectly he's played the fact that he's 1-3, but everyone's talking about a fine that he's going to be paying with pennies.
Yeah.
But the perfect way to make that something to keep laughing about rather than something to actually become angry about in Oxford is to just beat Vandy by 30-plus.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee, especially after getting fined last week, Lane Kiffin gets a chance in this game to strut, to do how did Derek Dooley put it? Chest pumping and hot sauce? That...
Where's Rommel?
He will be doing as such.
Joey Freshwater and the boys, as I learned yesterday.
By the way, the Egg Bowl might be the most entertaining matchup of, like, two-win teams ever.
Yeah, pretty much. Vanderbilt breaking out the gold jerseys again. Thank God those are back. Vanderbilt's uniforms, as little as people care about this, they were really good, and now they suck, and that makes me sad. Vanderbilt's going to win this football game.
Okay.
You're ridiculous.
You know, Derek Mason, he's going to solve the riddle that is Lane Kiffin. The defense is going to go out there and ball. Ken Seals and the boys on offense, 2 weeks to game plan for this one. They're going to have it figured out.
How can you lie through your teeth to the fine patrons of this station like that?
I don't know. I just do it. I will say this, though. Vanderbilt, as bad as the scores have looked, I will say this again, the team has somehow found a way to get into goal-to-go situations 6 times without scoring points this year. So if you just, like, put points on the board in those situations, Vanderbilt looks like a far more respectable football team. I don't know how that happens. I understand if it happens, like, 2 or 3 times, but the fact that you're scoring no points, not even field goals, is honestly an accomplishment at this point in time, I think. So Vanderbilt wins this game by cashing in opportunities when they get into the red zone and making a couple plays on defense, tackling better than they have. They've had 2 weeks off. You know, some of that was COVID-related, but I think it's possible. And also, Derek Mason might be coaching for his job at this point. A lot more, as weird as it sounds, I think a lot more is on the line for him than it is for Lane Kiffin after this 1-3 start, because they could not win another game, and then doing what they did to Alabama would be enough for people to be excited about them next year. Am I wrong about anything I just said?
Yeah, I mean, I get you. You know what? You have credit is due. You have a good pulse on what's going on with Vandy.
Anchor
down. They're not winning this. They're not going. They're not winning this week. They're not winning this week.
Well, if they don't win this week, Gabe, I don't know when they do. So, you know,
that's the larger issue here. That's the point.
Yeah, man. Arkansas was supposed to be the easy one. Didn't happen.
If we're being honest, the team that may be most incentivized to push back on going to a 9-game or 10-game conference schedule permanently is Vandy.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. Even though they lost to, like, NIU last year. Anyway, Run It Up will continue in hour number 2 when we come back. We'll take a look at the larger scope of college football, some action in the Big 12, some action in the Big 10 when we return.